Have you ever had an issue with someone, you know, that you're really close with? It could be a spouse, husband, wife, could be a father, could be your mother, could be a brother, sister, someone with whom you have a real close relationship, and you have this conversation with them, and suddenly the issue doesn't seem to be the issue. And you see their spirit deflate or get provoked, and you go, oh, brother, oh, what did I say now? Oh, have you ever had that experience where you just suddenly sense that the issue isn't the issue? And their spirit deflates, maybe even today, en route. Something was said, and you saw the spirit of the person kind of just go down. And you went, oh, brother, what did I say now? And there's a sense sometimes, oh, they're childish, maybe. I can't believe the things that upset you. Let me ask you this question. What is the issue when the issue isn't the issue? What is the issue when the issue isn't the issue? Maybe I'm going to be so simplistic today as to suggest that there is one thing usually going on in the heart of a woman, whether it's your mother, whether it's your sister, whether it's a coworker with whom you're close, and there's one issue going on in the spirit of a male. And those two things are not the same. Let me give you a story. Suppose it's January 10th, and the wife gets on the scale, and she's put on 12 pounds. And she comes to her husband and says, I can't believe it. I put on 12 pounds from all those Thanksgiving meals, the Christmas parties, the New Year's celebrations. I feel fat. I feel ugly. I have nothing to wear. He listens because he was trained in the 90s. But the next day, he's at the Christian bookstore, and the lead book is Dieting for Today's Christian Woman. You got a problem with that? But the subtitle is Post-Holiday Menus. So he says to himself, is this a diet book or a cookbook? He goes with cookbook. He buys it, brings it home, and gives it to her, and for a brief moment when he hands it to her, he thinks he's at Cape Canaveral. She goes ballistic. And on the way up, she screams through her pink megaphone into his blue hearing aids, you men have two brains! Two brains! One's lost and the other's out looking for it. Now, her spirit is provoked at that moment. And the issue isn't really the issue. The issue really isn't the diet book. The issue of the diet book is a real issue. It is a real issue, but it is no longer the root issue. What is the issue when the issue isn't the issue? I'll answer that in just a moment. Now, what's interesting is if you gave him a diet book, she comes home with a diet book for him, what's his response? Hey, thanks. What's for dinner? Why doesn't he go ballistic? Why doesn't he go ballistic? Interesting. Now, if her best girlfriend came over with a diet book, what's her response to her best girlfriend with a diet book? Is that a diet book? You bought that for me? You are so sweet. Hey, should we do this together? Do you want to start tonight? Hang on to the diet book story. I'll come back to it in a moment. With the husband and the wife, what was the issue with her when the issue wasn't the issue? What was the issue with her? Why did her spirit get provoked? Why did she call him a brainless idiot? 6 weeks down the road, she's in that Christian bookstore, and the lead book is the Key to Marital Bliss, Communication. She grabs that book. She says, wow, we need to read this. So she decides to buy it. This is the third marriage book she's purchased for the two of them to read in the last 12 months. She comes home and she devours it from cover to cover. Says, he needs to read this. But he's been really busy. He's been swamped. He doesn't have time to read it from cover to cover. So I'm going to highlight in yellow some of the key sections for him to. And then she puts it on the stand next to the recliner. They reclines in when he watches Sports Center. He comes in, suddenly sees this marriage book. He goes, oh, brother, oh, no. Oh, she's highlighted everything in yellow. Oh, I don't know why the publishers just don't publish it in yellow. Good grief. This is a third marriage book she's purchased in the last 12 months. I can't believe this. The first two books we read together, we got in huge fights. If I say anything about the marriage, I get in trouble. If I don't say anything about the marriage, I'm going to get in trouble. But if I don't say anything, I'm going to get in less trouble. So he stonewalls. Just refuses to read it. Why? Why does he pull back? Why does his spirit deflate? Why is he not energized by this marriage book? What is the issue? Is it the marriage book? At a certain point, that marriage book is a real issue to him, but it's not the root issue to him. There's another issue going on in his spirit. You see, what's interesting is if he brought a marriage book home for her, when she saw it under his arm, what's that book? That's a marriage book. Did someone give that to you? They didn't? You bought that with your own money? You're not in a small group. This is not a... She is blown away. She'll be on the phone to her girlfriends. He bought a marriage book. I did not tell him to. I know. I did. Why? We're connecting. We're one. We're soulmates. See, now why is she energized by that? Now, this is a bell curve. Not everybody abides by that. Some men are upset when you give them a diet book, and some women don't get excited about a marriage book. But when you look at the bell curve, the statistics are statistically significant in terms of this being a male and female dynamic. What is going on in her spirit during the diet book issue? What is going on in his spirit in the marriage book issue? Well, research at the University of Washington, they studied 2,000 couples for 20 years, and they discovered that, and it was powerful, they said, we now know it comes down to two key ingredients for successful marriages. And when those two key ingredients are present, the marriage succeeds. And when they're not there, the marriage really struggles. What are those two key ingredients? Love and respect. Love and respect. And then they came up with, not only do we all need love and respect equally, but there was a gender difference. That during conflicts, they found that 85% of the time, men stonewall at a certain point in conflict. Just withdraw and stonewall. Don't want to talk about it. Done. Quit provoking me or picking a fight. They just shut down. Now, my mother would stonewall. My sister stonewall. So they're not men because they stonewall. 85% of those who stonewall are men. 15% are women. But they found that women, on the other hand, moved toward the husband and were critical in their critique and were complaining. There was a negativity. And so it's an interesting dynamic, and what they discovered is that as the more the women went toward the man, because she's a nurturer, wanting to help the relationship, they weren't suspicious of motivation, they were just describing the dynamic. She's moving toward to try to basically help the relationship, but comes across critically and complaining. And when that happened, he would withdraw and stonewall more. And when he would withdraw and stonewall more, she would criticize and complain more. And this began a cycle of sorts. And what happened is that the women began to interpret that stonewalling and that withdrawing as an act of hostility. She couldn't imagine reacting that way in the face of a minor criticism. She saw it as an act of hostility, the opposite of love. But ongoing criticism in a male's world, criticism, 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 is eventually heard as contempt for who he is as a human being. The opposite of respect. And what you see then is gender specificity. We all need love and respect equally, but because I've got my PhD in family studies, we do a lot of research, and I wanted to tease this out. So we've asked 7,000 people this question. When you're in a conflict with your spouse or significant other, do you feel unloved at that moment or disrespected? Again, when you're in a conflict with your spouse or significant other, do you feel unloved at that moment or disrespected? 83% of the men say they feel disrespected. 72% of the women say they feel unloved. During conflict, let me insert, we all need love and respect equally. It's a true need. But the felt need during conflict is as different as pink is from blue, as male is from female. And maybe that's in part why Jesus said in Matthew 19, have you not read? He who made them from the beginning made them male and female. Not wrong, just different. But I envision her, she looks at the world through pink sunglasses, and it colors what she sees. She has pink hearing aids, and it affects what she hears, and she speaks through a pink megaphone. And she expects everybody to know what she means by what she says, because all of her girlfriends do. He, on the other hand, has blue sunglasses, blue hearing aids, and speaks through a blue megaphone. And he expects everybody to know what he means by what he says, because all of his buddies do. But what's interesting is that we look at things differently. And for instance, a wife says, I have nothing to wear. I have nothing to wear. What she means is she has nothing new. Her husband says, I have nothing to wear. What he means is he has nothing clean. And what's fascinating is that's the same sentence. I have nothing to wear. I have nothing to wear. We say the same thing but mean something totally different. So you can imagine then when situations arise where we're using different words and we have different meanings, and suddenly these innocent illustrations like I just gave you are no longer innocent. Somehow there begins to be some real misunderstanding between one another. For instance, this husband and wife worked, had a nice little business together. She said, I want to come home early from work and to fix this special recipe that I read about in this gourmet book. He said, fine, great. So she comes home early on a Friday. She prepares it. He comes home around 6. They're now seated at the table for a couple minutes when she blurts out, that's the worst meal I've ever made. He said, no, it's not, honey. Now, where's that going? Can't you see her saying, what are you saying? Are you saying I've made thousands of worse meals than that? Okay, mama's boy, go move with your mother for a couple weeks and let her feed your fat face. But what if he was full of goodwill? What if when she said, that's the worst meal I've ever made, he went, no, it's not, honey. Meaning you've never made a bad meal in your life. So much for that evening. That was shot. She was all over him, right? Then again, when she said, that's the worst meal I've ever made. No, it's not, honey. He says the same thing, but body language, gestures, tone, facial expressions all send a message that you treat me like a god. You really do. Another burnt offering. And we laugh at these because they're intended to be funny, but in real life, there are things that are being said that somehow we suddenly see the spirit of our spouse deflate. Why did her spirit deflate when she thought he was saying that she's the worst cook in the world? Was the issue about her cooking, or was there something else going on there? See, back to the marriage book and back to the diet book. When that diet book is handed to the wife from the husband, she hears a message, and that message is this. I don't accept you. I don't approve of you. I don't love who you are unless you look like a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. That's what your daughter will hear, your daughter-in-law will hear, that's what your wife hears, your sister, your mother. And when you see their spirit deflate, the diet book is a real issue, but the root issue is she's feeling unloved. And we can argue all day long that she's childish. Oh, brother, oh. And one of the reasons for that is that men have a different metabolism. The research points out in body image issues that women will look at themselves in a floor-length mirror and she sees all of her flaws and moves into self-deprecation. And she's very sensitive to body image issues. Whereas her husband, he can have a 40-pound spread in the front and the back. And he used to play in the gridiron, but he hadn't been on the field for 20 years, but he's still packing it in like he was. And so he's a big boy, and he's standing in front of a floor-length mirror, and what's he see? He sees Atlas. He can bring Atlas out anytime he wants. He just doesn't want to right now, okay? It's true. Every man knows that Atlas is in there. There's a six-pack in there. There was a sighting 20 years ago. So he's not as insecure about that issue. So it's so easy as men to pass judgment on our wife's vulnerability based on a natural strength that God gave to us to no credit of ourselves. And that's when we go, now, if we both smoked and we're trying to give up smoking and one failed one day, there's empathy. When we struggle with the same issues, we don't pass judgment. Tend not to. But in marriage, she's been permitted to have certain vulnerabilities that we don't, and he's been permitted to have certain vulnerabilities that she doesn't. And it's so easy to dismiss the other as childish and immature, and it ends up creating some real craziness that I'm going to explain in just a moment. But on the marriage book front, why would he shut down? Because he hears a message in his blue hearing aids that he thinks she's sending through her pink megaphone, and that message is this in that third marriage book. It's what he hears. I don't accept you. I don't approve of you. I don't respect who you are, Buster, unless you change right now and become more like me. That's what he hears. That's what your son will hear. That's what your son-in-law will hear. And we can dismiss that as childish, or you can realize that God has designed women differently when it comes to issues of emotionality and communication. You can't not look when you're talking. You have this desire when there's conflict, there's a momentary separation, but then you come back together and you ventilate. You get it all out. You get all that emotion out. And then one says, well, I'm sorry. And the other says, well, I'm sorry too. Well, will you forgive me? Yes, I forgive you. But will you forgive me? Yes, I will. And then there's a hugging and wiping away the tears. And then one is witty and she says something funny and the other throws her head back with laughter. And they wipe away the tears and they begin their activity again until the next conflict. And at the University of Washington, they called this idea that women are very comfortable in the ocean of emotion. And they see this as increasing reconciliation, resolution, but love. It increases love. They don't see it as a situation where somehow they're going to be pointed out that we don't respect who you are. But when the wife is looking at the husband, the message really is, you're not as loving as I am, and you really do need to change. And if the essence of masculinity is initiation and the essence of femininity is response, if you would just initiate a little bit differently, and I would outrespond you, but you need to change because you really aren't who you should be, and you're really not acceptable to me, and I really don't respect that. And your son will lose energy. And what we're up against is the culture that has removed this idea of respect for men from the marital radar screen. And it applies not only to the marriage thing, all male-female relationships. Some of you wonder why your dad shut down on you. And why your dad, and you're an adult daughter now, and you wonder, how do I have a relationship? You think he doesn't love you. No, I'm going to share something with you that'll be a breakthrough to your relationship with your dad. Because you're misreading what's really going on. The issue isn't what you think it is. And some of you have teen sons, your mother, and you're wondering why you're losing your teen sons, because you don't understand something here. And we've been coaching men on being more loving toward their daughters. We kind of get that, and so there's a right and a responsibility and a challenge that's being extended to men to be more loving. But we've removed this other idea because women will say to me all over the country, Dr. Emerson, I don't feel any respect for him, and it'd be hypocritical for me to show respect when I don't feel it, and I'm not going to be hypocritical. And everybody knows that respect must be earned, and he hasn't earned it. He isn't as loving as he should be. And he doesn't deserve it. And furthermore, the dictionary definition of respect is you show respect to your superiors. And he's not superior to me. I'm not inferior to him. I'm not going to be treated like a doormat. And I really think this is about his narcissism, and I'm not going to feed that. And I'll add to that, you really want me to fear male dominance, and this is return to patriarchy, and we're not going to do that, and I'm not going to subject myself to emotional abuse. But other than these things, I am really open to hearing what you have to say about this. How many of you have sons? Thank you. What I just shared with you is going to be the attitude your sweet daughter-in-law has toward your baby boy. And she's not going to have a mean bone in her body. But you see, she's been given license to say, I love you a ton, but I don't respect you right now. Total license to say that. And that's comparable to a man saying, woman, I respect you, especially since you got your old man's $10 million inheritance. Woo-wee! I respect you, woman. But let's get it straight. I never have loved you. I don't love you now, and I have no intentions of ever loving you because no one could love you, okay? I say to women, what would you feel if you heard that? I'd be devastated. I said, yeah. How long would it take you to get over it? I'd never get over it. What do you think your son is going to hear when he hears, I love you, but don't respect you? Would he be devastated? Yeah. Would it take him forever to get over it? Yeah. But when he deflates, when his spirit deflates, the issue, whatever it is, isn't the issue, he'll deflate at that point. He'll go off by himself because it's not honorable in the man's world to badmouth your wife to other men. So he just goes off by himself, and he's labeled even more unloving as he withdraws and stonewalls. When she hears that she's respected but not loved, she deflates. It's unbelievable, really hurt, and goes on a talk show. But does the Bible address this issue? It most certainly does. The great treatise in Ephesians 5 doesn't talk about obeying your husband. That's somehow we've got this idea. It doesn't talk about that. But Ephesians 5 is the great treatise in the New Testament on marriage. And what's exciting, verse 33 is the summary statement. And guess what the Lord says? That a husband must love his wife and a wife must respect her husband. And is that a sexist comment toward women? Not any more than it is toward loving a woman. I mean, if you love a woman, do all women become prima donnas? And if you respect the man, does that feed his ego and narcissism? Or is it true that every man here serves and dies for honor and that we're highly motivated? And is the key to motivating another person meeting that person's deepest need, especially during conflict? But here's what I discovered. It's counterintuitive to women to do this, and it's counterintuitive to men to do this. What do I mean? When a wife feels unloved, it's very unnatural for her to want to show respect. And when a man feels disrespected, it's very unnatural for him to want to put on love. And so you have an interesting dynamic. In fact, I saw a dynamic here that really blew me away, that when a wife feels unloved, I thought to myself, what happens? Well, she negatively reacts. You're stepping on her air hose, so to speak, but she ends up reacting in ways that feels disrespectful to her husband. And when a husband feels disrespected, it hurts him, and so he deflates and he negatively reacts. But he ends up negatively reacting in a way that feels unloving to his wife. What do I mean? When the diet book was handed to her, immediately, intuitively, wham, she's feeling unloved. She's feeling like she has to perform in order to merit his love. And that just sinks every woman's spirit. So immediately, you know, maybe I need to lose a few pounds, but I think you're sending me a different message, because when my girlfriend gives me the diet book, I don't feel unloved. But when you give it to me, I'm suspicious of your motives, and you're really trying to send me a deeper message, and that is you'll only love me if I look like a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. And she just shuts down. But she shuts down in a way that ends up reacting in a way that feels disrespectful to him. You men have two brains. One's lost, and the other's out looking for it. And she ends up coming across very disrespectfully, so he doesn't hear the deeper cry of her heart. I need reassurance that you love me. You're the only man in my life that can love me this way, and I'm insecure and I'm reacting this way to try to awaken you to that. And you should know why I'm reacting this way, because all my girlfriends know why I'm reacting this way. See, without love, defensively, she reacts offensively without respect. And some of you men have taken up offense against a woman who is basically saying, I have a need that only you can meet. And it's a compliment. It's the greatest of praises. But you've taken up offense toward a woman who needs you. And without respect, defensively, he reacts offensively without love. You give him the third marriage book and he gets insecure about this message. He loses energy. He doesn't have the same kind of natural tendency when it comes to emotionality. Actually, when men are in conflict, it's the honorable thing when two best of friends get in a conflict to say, let's just drop it and forget it. We just move on because we don't want the argument to escalate, because when men's heartbeats get to 100 beats per minute, they're in warrior mode and men can kill one another. So we live by the honor code. We live by the honor code. And the honorable thing to do is to say, drop it, forget it. But in a woman's world, that is interpreted as unloving. In a woman's world, she seeks to do the loving thing by moving toward to confront in order to connect, but ends up being interpreted as one who confronts in order to control, and he interprets her as disrespectful. Isn't it sad, church, that she seeks to do the loving thing only to be mislabeled disrespectful? He seeks to do the honorable thing only to be referred to as abusive, and you drop the word once about your son and he's dead in the water with every woman. You don't have to define the word at all. If it just feels abusive, he's abusive. I saw my dad attempt to strangle my mother to death. That's abuse. But for a man to do the honorable thing by simply de-escalating the conflict and try to pull the negativity out of the situation is not abuse. That's honorable. It may feel unloving, but that's honorable. And a woman who moves toward her husband to critique and try to help and try to reconcile, even though it feels disrespectful, if her motivation is to do the loving thing, that's not verbal abuse. But we'll just subscribe to our psychological frameworks and end up divorcing at epidemic rates, and the church will be looked at as bald-headed men selling hair restoration oil. But we can do it differently, because the Lord is saying, listen to me, church. Listen to me. Come close. Listen to me. And if you listen to me, everything will be okay. Everything will be okay. And what's so excited is it's so simple. What is what hits you when the University of Washington discovers it comes down to two key words, love and respect. Those are the two key ingredients. And then it's even gender specific in their research. And then you suddenly realize 2,000 years ago, the Lord revealed the truth. Husbands love, wives respect. It's almost like we have this truth hidden in plain sight. It's kind of like a secret hidden in plain sight. The question, of course, is how do we get off that crazy cycle? How do we get off that crazy cycle? When she's feeling unloved, she reacts in ways that feels disrespectful. And, of course, then when he feels disrespected, he reacts in ways that feel unloving. And good-willed people, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7:33 that the husband is concerned about how to please his wife and the wife is concerned about how to please her husband. So neither get up in the day. She does not get up in the morning, gentlemen, to think of ways of being disrespectful toward you. That's not her mission. In fact, when you see her spirit deflate and then get provoked, she's not using this situation as another opportunity to send you a message that she doesn't like who you are as a human being. That's not her pink framework. She's actually feeling insecure and defensive and saying, "Don't you understand? You are the only person that can meet this need." And ladies, when your husband is feeling disrespected, it's not rooted in his ego, but he will react in ways that you won't. He won't break down and cry and say, "We need to talk about this." He will get angry and pull back because he's in disbelief. So I say to women, sometimes after a doozy of a fight, go and stand in front of a floor-length mirror and reenact in front of that mirror everything you did toward your husband. The research points out that a woman's face turns sour, her eyes darken, the hands on the hips, the scolding finger, the sigh, the rolling of the eyes, the head goes back, and when estrogen kicks, the word estrogen kicks in, the word choice is incredible. But then ask yourself this question, and your daughter-in-law needs to ask this question toward your baby boy. Is there any person in his life who talks to him this way? And if the answer to that is no, then he's not hearing what you're saying. He thinks you're using this situation as another opportunity to send him a message that you don't respect who he is as a human being. And no husband feels fond feelings of love and affection in his heart toward a wife he thinks despises who he is as a human being, any more than a woman is going to sexually respond to a husband who's angry and harsh with her. God has created us different, not wrong. So now it begs the question, how do we get off that crazy cycle? In several weeks, we're going to come back. Hopefully, if you've got the time, we'd love to serve you in that. Let's pray together.
We hope you enjoyed the message today and that it'll be a source of encouragement to you this week. We desire to help people make sense out of life through Christ-centered living. It all begins with a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. The Bible says in Romans chapter 10 that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. Have you placed your trust in Christ? Well, no one can get to heaven by being good enough. We all have to trust Jesus Christ alone for forgiveness of sin and a home in heaven. For more information on this unique life in Christ, as well as more information on Champion Forest Baptist Church, we invite you to go to our website at championforest.org.